Ryan, you've lived in the village for, must have been 20 years at least, if not more.
25 years, I think.
25 years. And in that time you met and got to know some of the rather interesting characters.
Yes.
One of them was Herbie Gullard.
Herbie, who ran the garage.
That's right.
And filling station.
I think you have some interesting information which I don't think anyone has ever heard before.
Well, yes, poor old Herbie. A lovely man. I'm very, very fond of him. Everybody loved Herbie. And I think he was chairman of the parish council for quite a bit of time. Anyway, he lived in the house along the main road. And what I don't think anybody really knew was that underneath the aquifer, underground stream running parallel to the river, main river. And what Herbie had in his house in the kitchen was a round, well, I call it a manhole cover, and unfortunately one day he trod on it and it gave way. And Herbie very nearly managed to put his arms out to stop himself from going down, would otherwise have fallen 30 feet down into this underground river. Anyway, he shouted and he was hauled out in the end. But Herbie had never realised the danger that he was walking about on all the time. Anyway, his life, thank God, was saved.
Yes. Another interesting character who was well documented in the village is Freddie Stanfield.
Oh, Freddie, of course. Freddie, a retired solicitor, wrote the whole history of Eastmere and published a book on the subject. A very, very full book from going from, Iron Age times to these. He and I were trustees of the Forbes Almshouses for quite a long time, which was chaired by Francis Tyrwhitt Drake, because the owner of Bearley Estate was ex officio chairman of the trustees of the Forbes Almshouses, because they were originally formed by the Forbes family from Bearley. So we had the Francis Tyrwhitt Drake as chairman, and various other trustees, including Freddie Stanfield and myself. Freddie lived at Forge View, which is just across the street from Mr. Hobbs's.
That's Reg Hobbs.
Blacksmith. Reg Hobbs's blacksmiths. Yes, he did mostly horses, but he did a lot of ironwork as well. Reg Hobbs.
Yes.
Great man.
Which is, and the forge, of course, is the matter of controversy at the moment as to whether it should be turned into a house or a flat above.
Yes, my simple solution to that is to put up a very high net between it and the cricket field so that no cricket balls go through the roof.
Yes, well, that has been suggested by the English Cricket Board, as you probably will find out.
Yeah, and by me.
And by you. 12 metre high, they're suggesting.
Yes, it's quite possible.
Yes, but the question is the question of whether it can get planning permission.
Well, yes, but I mean, I played on the BBC cricket ground in London, which is completely surrounded by a very, very high net.
Mm. Right. Another character, or person who you have a story about, and that's Ethel Lambert.
Ethel Lambert, lovely, lovely Ethel Lambert, yes, one of the older inhabitants of the village. I had the opportunity to chair a conference or a talk-in from all the older members of the population of Eastmere, of how they got here, how they settled in, where they came from, etc., going right back to about 1900, when a lot of them had actually sort of arrived here, particularly Ethel Lambert, whose family came up from Portsmouth by horse and cart. We had a very, very interesting evening, which was recorded, and if it might be of interest to somebody researching the history of East Meon, that the recording is stored in the Winchester County Council Archives in the County Library, which might be interesting, because I've never played it back myself, but it was very, very fascinating stuff.
I think that is known.
Is it? Yes, yeah, yes, good.
But anyhow, thank you for that. There's another interesting person you talked to me about, that is Bob Fisher, who was the brother of the two sisters, Dorry and Clara.
That's right, yes, yes. Yes, well, Bob I remember quite well, and I may be wrong here, but I seem to remember him telling me one day he got a telescope. He went up to the top of Butser Hill, I think it was, and he looked down at East Meon. He said he brought it so close I could hear the clock click on the church clock. And then anyway, the sisters died. He moved. He never really moved out of East Meon all his life. And I don't think he even moved as far as Petersfield. Anyway, he retired to West Meon, where he bought a bungalow, which he called Dun Roaming.
Oh, no, love it. What a lovely story. Another interesting person who you knew was Ginger Phillips.
Oh, Ginger, yes. Ginger, who worked on one of the Atkinson farms. We used to play cricket together. I played for East Meon cricket team for a long, long time. And Ginger Phillips was our very, very crafty left-hand spin bowler. He was our secret weapon. Ginger, lovely man.
Did Ginger play with Jimmy Brown as well?
Yes, Jimmy Brown. I can't remember but the names of most of the members of the team now. We played all round. We played matches with all the neighbours, West Meon, Wembley, Stoke, yeah. Foxfield, yeah. etc.
And as you probably know, the current team is very, very much thought of. And the pitch is continually in use, because we lend the pitch to Hambledon, because they've got four teams and they've got enough pitches on which to play.
Yeah, that's interesting, yes, because we used to play Hambledon at the Bat and Ball, of course.
Yeah, at the Bat and Ball. Yeah. Yes.
Anybody hitting a six out of East Meon cricket pitch was quite liable to find it in a cow pad. In the field surrounding the pitch, yeah. surrounding the boundary, so you've got to be a bit careful where you field it.
There is one instance when the church needed funds.
Yes.
And can you tell me a little bit about the...
Well, I could tell you two very interesting stories about that. First of all, it needed a lot of repairing of the roof, of the lead on the roof, and it was... needed an awful lot of money, and I was able, luckily, to apply to the Peel Charitable Trust, owned by grandmother, and got £20,000 out of them, the first and last time I got anything out of them at all. That was one. Another occasion was when I was a church warden at the time, and a crack appeared near the foundations of the North Transept. So panic stations, Mr. Reverend John Laurie and myself rang the diocesan architect, and we asked him to come and have a look at it. He came and had a look at it, and he said that this could be serious, and we better dig down and see what the foundations look like. So we dug down, not very far, luckily, and found that there were no foundations at all. It had been built straight onto the chalk.
Which I think is called clunch or crunch.
Yes, I think so, yes. That's right. It had never moved in, nearly 1,000 years.
Yes.
It was all put back, and a thing called a telltale was hung on it to make sure it was no movement. Well, there never was any more movement at all. Which is an amazing thing that they could... build straight onto the chalk, with no foundation.
I think we must stop this business of reminiscing on these people, but there's one very interesting last person we should talk about, and that is Lawrence Jarvis Smith.
Yes, that's right, yes.
Was his name Jarvis?
I think so, yes, that's right, yes.
To recall about him, because I think when you were living at Garson Farm in the 1950s, 60s, that you had, or your wife Jill had reason to go and try and help sort him out.
Well, literally, yes. I mean, as a sort of universal aunt figure, because he terrorized the whole village, particularly the estate where he, Chiston estate where he lived. His mother was an interesting character. She always went out and in an enormous hat with an entire fruit salad on the top of it. It's an amazing character. But Laurie was really quite a dangerous character. I think he was obviously psychopathic, slightly. Anyway, at one time, he decided to go to Canada to emigrate. Unfortunately, he decided to rob a bank. He was incarcerated, spent about 4 or 5 years in prison, during which time he learnt a very interesting trade, which was making leather goods and with a hot iron, burning patterns into them. Extremely good too. Anyway, he eventually came back. He was still a bit wild, but Jill decided he needed, calming down eventually. And she very bravely, when he was having one of his wild fits, used to go in there and take him a cup of tea or cake or something like that, and sort of talk him out of his psychopathic fits, which was just what it was, really.
Yeah.
I think he took LSD as well, which didn't help in matters. But anyway, she managed to befriend him, and he admitted that he owed her a tremendous lot. She was very good at giving advice, quite unofficially, but she was very, very good at sort of hitting the nail on the head as to what was wrong with people and talking them out of it. In fact, she was appointed by the police at one time as a victim advisor.
How interesting. You were living here in East Meon, as we said, in the farm, Carston, and you decided eventually, I think due to some family circumstances, to move from here to Coldhaze at Liss.
Yes.
Just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you see, my father died in quite a long time ago, in 1965, I think. Mother lived in Coldhaze, which was a very large Victorian house built by Alfred Waterhouse, a very well-known Victorian architect in the 1870s, which was actually the dower house of the Selborne estate, funny enough, the Blackmore estate. She got very old and decided she would go and live in the cottage next door. And so we then, as a family, moved into Coldhaze, which had been left to me and my brother, and I bought him out his half, his share, and then went over to live there. We had four young children, had a very, very, they had a very, very busy social life. It worked very, very well. At one time, I was farming both farms, Garston Farm and Steep Marsh Farm at Coldhaze. Which went on for quite a long time. Then I thought, I didn't really want to go on commuting from one farm to another, and eventually sold it to William Drake, who owns it now.
That's right.
Added it to his estate.
And having moved away, any regrets? Leaving?
Not really.
The quality of the farming was much better here in East Meon than it was at Coldhaze, which is gall clay, mainly.
Well, Coldhaze Farm was upper green sand, which is chalk, really, clay, and then lower green sand. All the way along the downs, there is that strip of green sand, clay,
escarpment, yes,
and lower green sand, all the way down to Beachy Head, actually. All the strip goes the whole way down, South Downs.
Yes.
Quite interesting.
Thank you, Brian, for coming and talking to me about your time in East Meon.
Well, I'm absolutely delighted to do so. I'm sure you'll find it pretty boring, but still, you'll no doubt edit out the bits you don't want. I hope.
Is there anything there which needs editing out? Thank you, Brian.